Hey guys, welcome back to Skincare Anarchy. This is your host Ekta, and today's episode is very, very special to me because I am really excited to learn all about this phenomenal brand. As many of you know, we are in the space right now, as far as the beauty industry goes and the wellness industries go, where aging well and longevity science is really taking over, and it's taking front and center positions. So without further ado, I want to introduce you guys to the founder of a revolutionary new brand that I discovered thanks to Jan Marini. Huge shout out to Jan for putting me onto Novos. But without further ado, welcome Chris Mirabile, founder of Novos. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Ekta. It's nice to be here.
It's lovely to host you. And like I said, you know, I'm already a huge fan of the brand and can't wait to learn all about it. But I really want to learn about you first and your background and what led to, you know, your work with Novos, if you could walk us down memory lane.
Sure. So it begins when I was 12 years old. I was really interested in health. I saw an issue of Men's Health magazine on the newsstand, and I was inspired by the people in the magazine. So I started to exercise and eat healthy. And so, compared to most other 12 and 13 year olds, I was more healthy than most. So it came as a real surprise to me when I was 16 years old and I was in New York City on a school trip, when I suddenly felt dizzy and nauseous. And the next thing I knew, I woke up with blood all over my shirt because I had had a seizure. And when I was rushed to the emergency room, they later found out that it was caused by a brain tumor. And so the next steps were emergency surgery and radiation and removal of that tumor. And then about a year worth of recovery. And all that time, it really shaped me in so many different ways. I was contemplating mortality at 16 years old and in a position where I never wanted to be again until like the very, very final days, hopefully far out into the future. So that really evolved my thinking of health from one that was much more superficial, admittedly. Like when I was a teenager, I just wanted to be attractive and play sports well. And so I wanted to build muscle and that's more of the aesthetic side of health. But after this experience, I realized that health is far more than that. It's biology. It is the avoidance of disease. And so that was a seed that was planted that has over the years eventually blossomed into what I've now started with Novos.
That's wow. What a story. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that, first of all, at such a young age, but I am so happy to see that not only did you come through, but now you're doing something so incredible with your time and your work. I mean, really hats off to you, Chris. That's very inspiring.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
No, I mean, I really want to learn all about the brand, really, because the idea of this aging, like aging well, right? It's almost, treated as this novel approach now in the cosmetic industry. And I always find it to be a little strange, from a scientific standpoint, where, I kind of grew up with science and seeing how we definitely don't propagate anti-aging, in general, and most scientists don't. So when I found your brand, I was just so intrigued by how you guys were really working with things like, focusing on telomeres and stuff. So I want you to talk to us about that. Talk to us about like, what does Novos really stand for? And what is the approach you're taking towards aging well?
Sure. Yeah. When scientists in the field of longevity medicine and longevity biology hear the term anti-aging, they kind of like shriek because it's not something that they believe in, the idea of anti-aging, as opposed to longevity. Longevity being trying to extend your health span and lifespan by as much as possible. And in doing so, you could potentially slow down the aging process, which can in some sense lead you to that terminology of anti-aging, but not in the traditional sense. When you think of cosmetics and skincare products, it's typically just trying to hide the signs of aging by, for example, moisturizing your skin more. Whereas longevity would be taking the approach of trying to slow down the underlying biological mechanisms or causes of aging so that you are actually slowing down the aging process for your skin, but for your entire organ system, your entire organism, if you will, as a whole. So there's specifically 12 hallmarks of aging that scientists have uncovered. And Novos as a brand, as well as the flagship product that we sell, addresses all 12 of those hallmarks simultaneously. We also include in our formulation, and since you brought up skin health, I'll talk a little bit to this. There are ingredients that can have favorable impacts on skin health from the inside out. So you can orally ingest these ingredients rather than applying them topically, and they can have positive effects. Most people know of collagen by now. There's also, for example, oral hyaluronic acid that can increase the hyaluronic acid in your skin and then thereby increasing the moisturization of your skin in the deeper layers of the dermis, as opposed to the topical solutions that are really on like the top layers in the epidermis of the skin. So these exist. There will be more and more companies trying to create formulations that do this. Where Novos is different is, although we have ingredients that can have these short-term skin health benefits, we are, once again, we are focusing on the biological causes of aging as the foundation of the formulas. So it's more about the long-term aging process, so that when you fast forward years from now or a decade from now, you have actually put the brakes on aging and you're doing far better than your peers.
That makes so much sense to me. Honestly, Chris, that's more practical than anything I've ever heard about it. Because I mean, even with things like collagen, like you had brought up, like, you know, hyaluronic acid, collagen, I mean, I'm always, dealing with like supplement brands that want to, you know, come on the show or tell us about what they're doing. But I always have this problem with understanding why people think that ingesting giant proteins that are not going to be utilized, you know, by the body is an approach towards, you know, doing what exactly you're talking about here, which is a whole different idea, right? I mean, it's like people don't understand like molecular biology sometimes, I think, because that's not how things work. You can't just take, you know, a giant collagen molecule and just think that it's going to go where it needs to go, you know? So I have my own frustrations with that, I think, you know? But you had mentioned the 12 pillars, right, of aging, and I would love for you to walk us through those if you could.
Sure. So they're known as the 12 hallmarks of aging, or the 12 mechanisms of aging in the scientific community. Shorthand, you could just say the 12 causes of aging, and they all connect with each other. It's this complex web where they are all impacting each other. I'll go through each of them, and I'll just give a very quick summary of each of them for your listeners to understand from a high level what each of these does. So first is mitochondrial dysfunction, and mitochondria are the power plants of our cells. They convert the carbs and the fats and the proteins that we ingest into energy. And so as we age, the mitochondria, they either die off, so you have fewer of them in each cell, or they become dysfunctional. And if the power centers of your cells are becoming dysfunctional, then the cells can't behave as they should. And then by extension, the tissue and the organ that they are a part of is not going to fully function as it should. The second is cellular senescence. So senescent cells are former healthy cells that stop dividing, and they secrete substances that damage the healthy surrounding cells. A lot of people think of senescent cells as zombie cells. They have that type of characteristic. They're not actually behaving as a healthy cell. They're also not dead and removed by the body. So they just linger around, and they release what's called a SASP, which is this senescent associated secretory phenotype, a big term for a simple idea of just free radicals that can then damage nearby cells and cause them to become senescent. And so you get more of these. They increase exponentially in number as you get older. And so you want to try to reduce the amount of senescent cells. And it plays a significant role in skin aging, actually. Number three is loss of proteostasis. So over time, there's more and more proteins that accumulate inside and outside of our cells, which then interferes with proper functioning of those cells. An analogy I like to give is if you think of garbage accumulating inside of your home and outside of your home. So you take the trash bags out and now there's a ton of garbage by your driveway and your walkway and there's garbage inside. Now you can't access the features of your home. You can't even get into your home. So it's very similar with a loss of proteostasis when the proteins build up. Number four is altered intercellular communication. So as we get older, our cells become increasingly exposed to a hostile environment, which is largely based on all of these different hallmarks of aging kind of conspiring together. And it leads to an increase in inflammation, more senescent cells, like I mentioned, dysfunctional stem cells, which we'll talk about in a moment. And so the cells are not able to communicate with each other as well. When you think of our bodies, it's this like vast, complicated network, communication network, and molecules are secreted to be able to communicate to other cells. And partly as a result of the loss of proteostasis and other reasons as well, the cells can't communicate with each other as well, and therefore they don't respond to stimuli the way they should. And that leads to a negative environment. Number five is genomic instability. So most people think of this as DNA damage. And so DNA damage can be caused from all different sources. It can be caused by UV radiation, which I'm sure you talk about all of the time. It can be caused by, you know, alcohol consumption or eating unhealthy foods. So the body is fortunately able to repair DNA. But the more damage that occurs, the more likely it is that the body misses something and mutations take place. And every time our DNA is damaged, our telomeres, which we'll talk about in a moment, they become shorter and more dysfunctional. So I might as well just jump straight to telomere shortening. So telomere shortening, we'll say that's number six. So this is the ends of the chromosomes. And the chromosomes are where our DNA sits. And so these are like protective end caps of the chromosomes. And every time our cells are dividing, those telomeres get shorter. Yeah. And when those telomeres get too short, then health consequences result. For example, higher rates of gastrointestinal cancer if your telomeres are very short. Now, if you have a mid-length or a long-length telomere, you're probably in good shape. And the good thing is that telomeres are something that you can actually modify in the sense of you can increase their length with different dietary practices, with different supplements, and so on. Number seven is epigenetic alterations. So we talked about the genes and DNA. So the epigenome, an analogy I like to give is that if your genes are like a piano, the epigenome is like the piano player. And it's essentially the expression of the genes, which genes are turned on and which genes are turned off. And when we're young, our genes are epigenetically expressed in a very good way. If you imagine like it's playing a, you know, Tchaikovsky on the keys, right? And then if you fast forward to, you know, the later years of your life, there are certain keys that you press the wrong key, or you accidentally miss a key, or you add a key, and it doesn't sound as good as it did before. And so these alterations, these changes are detectable. And there have actually been clocks that have been created to measure people's biological age based on these patterns that emerge in the epigenome. So number eight, I think we're up to now, is deregulated nutrient sensing. So as we age, our cells are less tuned to nutrient signals, which then disrupts their ability to produce energy. So if you think of people as they get older, common symptoms of age are, for example, higher blood glucose levels, less insulin sensitivity, higher levels of cholesterol and fatty acids and so on in the bloodstream. And this is as a result of the deregulated nutrient sensing. Our bodies are not as sensitive to these molecules as they otherwise would be. Number nine is stem cell exhaustion. So stem cells are the cells that are producing replicas or copies of themselves to then maintain the health of our tissues and our organs, and they start to become dysfunctional as we age, or they die off. And so as a result, our tissues end up being less replenished and they're less well maintained. Number 10 is actually new. So just a little bit of context. The first nine were uncovered in a seminal paper in a journal called Cell almost a decade ago. And it was a meta-analysis of hundreds of other studies where they looked at different causes of aging, and then they categorized them, and they categorized them into these nine hallmarks. Those same authors of that seminal paper have created a new paper that was only published about 2 months ago. And in this paper, they've identified three new hallmarks that they wanted to add to the original nine. So these are well known and they've been studied well, but they're new in the context of accounting them officially for biological causes of aging. And so the first one of those is inflammaging. So not inflammation, it's inflammaging. It's a play on words. It's essentially a chronic low-grade inflammation. This is inflammation that, you know, might be like a quiet whisper when you're in your, you know, 20s or 30s. And as every decade passes, it's increasing. An analogy I like to give for this is the whole boiling frog example of, you know, the frog sitting in a cool, tepid water pot. And then the temperature starts to rise slowly, gradually, before it gets to the point that it starts to boil. And so inflammation or inflammaging is something that we want to keep an eye on for aging. Number 11 is disabled autophagy. So autophagy is a biological process in which cells and different components of cells are absorbed. The body will essentially eat those cells and eat those components and recycle them. And as you age, the body is less capable of doing it and does it less so. And then finally, the final one is dysbiosis or microbiome dysbiosis. So there's been tons of research in the microbiome and how the microbiome can impact practically every other organ system in the body. We all heard by now about the, you know, gut-brain connection, but it goes well beyond just the gut-brain connection. It goes all over the place. And so as we age, the bacteria changes, and the status of the microbiome changes. So, for example, maybe a more permeable gut, maybe more inflammation in the gut, maybe different bacterial species that are not as healthy start to emerge. Yeah. And we actually see in very long-lived people like centenarians that there's specific microbial species, like, for example, Akkermansia is one of them, that increases dramatically as people get into the later years of their life. That is, the healthier people get into these later years of their life. But it's at very low levels when you're young, and it's that very low levels when you're unhealthy. So those are all 12, if that wasn't enough.
Yeah, no, that was wonderful. Thank you for that, because I really wanted the audience to have this idea, because, you know, it's very important to really, you know, outline these different 12 points that you addressed here. Now, I do have some questions, and I would love for you to elaborate on a few of these. My biggest one, I think, you know, I completely just, it makes sense to me, everything that you mentioned. First of all, I want to say that it really does all work together. And, you know, for everyone listening, it's good to have like a classification system where you're able to, you know, break down things into like, these are the different things that are working to create this one response. But there is this, you know, intrinsic mechanism in our body where everything does seem to work together at one point. So, you know, with that being said, I really want to learn about, for example, you had mentioned like autophagy, and then you mentioned the epigenetics and the loss of proteostasis. I mean, all of this makes me think of like ubiquitination, right? And like marking proteins to go get degraded, or, you know, telling cells when they need to like be done. You know what I mean? Like when apoptosis should occur. So like, what are some of the ways that Novos is targeting this from like a multifaceted angle, you know, in terms of just whether it's your formulation or whether it's your approach towards these molecular pathways? I mean, has that been difficult, or how, like, what's that whole experience been like for you to do that?
Sure. So let me give the audience a little bit more context and zoom out, and then we can zoom into your specific question. So Novos as a company, we're a public benefit corporation. My intention is to be able to help society at large, regardless of whether they're purchasing products from us or not. And part of this is because of my experience with a brain tumor. Another part of it is that I lost my mother while I was founding the company to pancreatic cancer, and I dedicated the company to her. And so I want to do as much as I can to try to reduce the suffering. While, of course, we are a for-profit business, and so we do need to sell product. So with all of that said, we've got three legs to the stool of Novos. So one of those legs, and this is where we really shine for the public benefit, is in the form of information, knowledge that we share with the public. We want to educate people about longevity, take the latest discoveries and innovations from the scientific lab, and do that knowledge transfer in a comprehensive way for the consumer to be able to understand it without dumbing it down. Our content is written by MDs and PhDs, and scientifically referenced, but also something that is comprehensive for the average person or the sophisticated person to be able to learn from. And so you can find that on our website, novoslabs.com, on the blog section. We also have webinars that we host where we dig into topics, and you can watch videos of those on YouTube. And so that's the first leg. The second leg is testing. And for testing, there are free things we can do. We offer a questionnaire on the website that gives you a longevity score. This is based on scientific studies and your lifestyle and family history, and it can then give you a score as to how well you're doing for longevity. It's important to note that 90% of your longevity, so your health span and your lifespan, is due to lifestyle, and only 10% is due to your genetics. So that's really important for people to keep in mind. It's not all in the genes. It's far less than most people think. And where it tends to become more important is when you're looking at people who are living to 110, 120 years old. But for most of us to live to 90, 100 years old, it's predominantly lifestyle. A second test we offer for free is something called Face Age, where your audience might be particularly interested in this. It's a facial AI tool that we pay for, but we give it for free to our to the general public. You take a selfie, and it will, based on a data set of 12 million people, it will tell you how old your face looks, your facial eye score, like eye bags and so on, your skin health, like wrinkles, inflammation in the form of redness, pore size, and so on. And then, of course, we don't leave you with that. We give you then articles and content to give you guidance on how to improve all of these different scores. And then we also have a product that we sell, which is called Novos Age. This is an epigenetic test. I mentioned the epigenome before. It looks at your epigenome, and it tells you your pace of aging, your biological age, and your telomere length. So basically, two of the hallmarks are accounted for in the form of the epigenetics and the telomeres in this test. And it's not our own test. Admittedly, we license it from Columbia University and Duke University. We did so because we firmly believe this is the most powerful test in the world for biological age. There are many companies coming out with them now. Some are saliva tests. We're a blood test, which is superior to saliva tests. There are 45 studies published at 30 different labs across the world investigating the test that we share. So it's very open in the scientific community, whereas other companies have their own private black box solution with really no scientific validation. So for a number of reasons, we believe this is the best one. And we offer that to consumers to really track your pace of aging. It's kind of like the equivalent of a scale for a weight loss journey. This is for your longevity journey. And then to your question, the third leg to Novos is our formulations. And this is our bread and butter. We have Novos Core and Novos Boost. Novos Core is what we are most proud of. This is a formulation. It's made up of 12 different ingredients. It's the very first formula to address the 12 hallmarks of aging. It was created with a team of scientists and MDs. We have a scientific advisory board of six members from Harvard Medical School, MIT, and the Salk Institute. Some really big names in the scientific community. For example, Dr. George Church, who invented genome sequencing in the 1980s, but all of whom are researchers in the longevity space. And so together we formulated this. It's a patent pending formulation. These 12 ingredients, the total weight of all of these is almost 7 grams of active ingredients. When you think of most supplements, they're giving you like 250 milligrams of something or 500 milligrams. But we're giving a very significant dose based on what studies have found to be the most effective dosages. To getting specifically to your question, we wanted to make sure that all of the ingredients had impacts on aging. And if you go to our website and you go to the science section at the top and you click on approach, you'll see the approach we took specifically for the formulation. And so I'll mention a few of them. There are 10 different considerations we made. But one I've already mentioned is they have to have the ability to impact aging hallmarks and ideally multiple at the same time. They have to have been able to extend lifespan in various animal models, which would then hint at the biological pathways as being evolutionarily conserved. So in other words, evolution found this to be important enough to make sure that it exists in worms and in mice and in primates and in humans. And therefore, it is fair to believe that this is also going to extend lifespan in humans. Right. Now, I say that because it's difficult to measure, to track lifespan in humans in a study because it would take tens of millions of dollars, decades to complete. And it's just not very feasible to do lifespan studies on humans, but we can in animals, and we can understand how the substance is working and then compare to humans. And then we can also look at humans and see when they take these substances, do they display better health? For example, lower incidences of aging related diseases. Is it associated with a reduced risk of mortality in humans? So these are, I've only gotten up to the first five of the 10, but these are different considerations we've made when we put all of the different potential ingredients through a filter to then arrive at a smaller subset from which we then dug really deep into the research to get to an even smaller subset to eventually reach the 12.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it makes sense what you're saying, because at the end of the day, you know, it really is about studying the commonalities, like you said, in the evolutionary status of all organisms that match very closely to human, you know, the human genome. And I think that is like kind of the standard in science, I think, overall. But my biggest question still, you know, it's always this idea of, you know, how do you really measure the value of age, you know, in terms of not just years, but like, you know, there's also this component of like a good life, right? Like in terms of just being alive versus just being actually healthy and alive. So I want to ask you, you know, with the approach you guys are taking, are you measuring what exactly are you measuring? Are you measuring, for example, like, you know, you had mentioned the epigenome and then doing that test where you can, you know, analyze just based on that, what someone's age span is most likely going to be. I mean, are you going again and again and like measuring that like after people start taking the product, or like how does the actual testing and the clinical trials and stuff work around this?
Sure. So when it comes to scientific testing, we also have on our website in the science section a page called Evidence. And in there, we go over the very fundamentals from which we formulated, which is at this point more than 220 scientific studies for attesting to the power of our ingredients. Then we did user testing to make sure that there were no side effects. And so we had dozens of people testing before we launched as a company, making sure there are no side effects, and then also finding out any short-term benefits that they might experience, which we were happy to find there were numerous. For example, improvements in skin health in the form of hydration and firmness, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a moment. In terms of mood. So we found that people were more calm and that's probably mediated by a few of the ingredients that if we get into those later, I can share, improvements in energy and sleep. And so, those were all really good early signs. We went on from there to do a skin test. It was a very small in-house study, but we used this device called an indentometer to measure the firmness of skin. And we found that all test subjects had improvements in their skin firmness at a minimum of 12%, an average of 22%, and a maximum that was significantly higher than that. I don't recall off the top of my head. Then we went on to in vitro studies. So we used human cells, in some cases, skin cells, for example, and we so far have done studies looking at DNA damage as well as cellular senescence. So the very first study we ran, we had a control that did not get Novos. And then, of course, we had the experiment with Novos. And we irradiated the cells, and we found that Novos was able to reduce DNA oxidation by somewhere in the neighborhood of about 50%, 45 or 50%. Yes, very significant. The lab that did this for us had done about $7 million worth of studies prior to Novos Core. They had warned us and said, we've studied all of your ingredients. There's no significant improvements. We've also done pharmaceutical drugs. We haven't found anything that really wowed us. And then they, before even calling us, they called their CEO to tell him our results, because we were the first formulation after $7 million worth of studies that they found we had such significant results. So that was a really nice positive outcome that we found. We then went on to
amazing.
So on that same theme of DNA damage, I'll skip ahead to the third study. So there is another one that we haven't published yet because we're doing more studies with them, but there is a laboratory in Italy, an academic lab that administer chemotherapeutics to human cells. And then with, again, Novos and without Novos, and found that with a very aggressive chemo, in the control where there's no Novos, practically all of the DNA has double strand breaks. And so that's beyond oxidative damage. That is like mutilating the DNA. It's almost like a comparison with a car.
That's like UV damage. That's straight UV damage. Like, you know what I mean? Like really, like UV damage. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. It's like I think of an analogy with a car. It's like oxidative damage would be like rusting of the exterior of the car, whereas double strand breaks is like slicing the car down the axle, right? It's like a completely different level. And so for that, I can't speak of specific numbers, but what I will say is that we have significantly reduced the amount of double strand and single strand breaks of the DNA after administration of the Novos formulation to those cells. A third study we did was looking at cellular senescence, and we compared to the gold standard longevity drug that all researchers consider to be the best longevity drug in existence, which is rapamycin. It's a prescription drug for immunomodulation, typically prescribed for organ transplants. It has actually been found to extend lifespan in every species that has been studied, but it's aggressive, and not everyone wants to take a prescription drug, especially because of side effects. And so, it was found that we had a senostatic property on the senescent cells. So we stopped the senescent cells from spreading, and we actually shrunk the size of them by about 45%. And it was at the same order of magnitude approximately as the prescription gold standard rapamycin. And then getting to humans and more of an in vivo approach, what we found was we did a case study just for the sake of speed and being able to execute quickly. This was a small scale. It was 11 participants. But what we found was with epigenetic testing, 73% of the participants had statistically significant improvements in their pace of aging. And then of those who did not have improvements, zero of them had accelerated aging, which you would expect would happen if they're just because of lifestyle stressors, right? So you would expect there would be some who had accelerated aging. Zero did. And the p-value of the study, so, you know, the probability that this is that it is a coincidence, was 0.001. So well beyond the 0.05 expectation for statistical significance. And now we have clinical trials also underway, but they're at the very beginning. So I can't say anything about those yet.
Wow. I'm really blown away right now, Chris. This is really, really great data. I mean, that's very impressive. I mean, I know there's a lot of buzz right now around, for example, like metformin, about anti-aging benefits or whatever, but I'm not fully sold on that. You know what I mean? So like, I really, really value what you guys are doing here, because the idea, it again comes back to that question I had asked you, was that, you know, is there like, you know, individual targeting of these 12, you know, hallmarks of aging. But in reality, I mean, you have to have a formula that is combating things in a very, like, I guess, I don't know what the real word would be, but it's like a multifaceted approach, right? I mean, I always think of the human body, and for this, for everyone listening, that, you know, it's a moving, living organism, right, guys? So everything's changing constantly. So for you to be able to target things like signs of aging or the, you know, the real underlying causes of aging, that's going to change day to day. And it's also going to change based on you as a person, you know, especially because, Chris, you had brought up, for example, the microbiome. And just for our listeners, you know, to kind of further elaborate on that, you know, your microbiome, for example, is different based on who you are, just like your epigenome is. You know, it's something that we're now in science coming to the realization of, this individualized need of treatment plans for people. You know, this one size fits all is very hard to accomplish, I think, but what you guys are doing is really so interesting to me, because with everything in science, there's a fundamental baseline that you have to work with. And I think by figuring out these hallmarks and then targeting these hallmarks, you're establishing that baseline of what longevity science should really be and where it should start. You know, so I'm very excited to see what you build upon, you know, with this data and what you've already discovered. And also hats off to you for working with such talented professionals on your team, you know, on your medical board. That's very impressive that you're working with these people.
Well, thank you. It's as I mentioned before, it is my passion, and I'm creating products that I myself want to take, and I want to give to my friends, my family, my loved ones, and then of course the community at large. So,
It makes sense. And you know, one thing I love that what you said was this idea of like overall, like you had spoken something about mood, I think, or just overall, like you know, the mood stabilization. I think you had said something about that. And I noticed you have lithium in your ingredient list. And I like that you have this low dose of lithium in there, because it's actually interesting. I was, you know, very long ago, there was this psychiatrist I used to follow, and he was doing some very interesting work, where he was saying that, you know, half the time the patients, even if they were patients that were just, you know, seasonally depressed or, you know, whatever it was, it didn't have to be a mood disorder, right? It was just anything, anyone who would come to him, what he was doing was using microdosing of lithium, and it was working. If in all patients, like it wasn't just like one disease or one disorder, no, it was across the board. So he had collected the significant amount of data around that one ingredient and its benefits if you use it in the right doses, you know? And so that's really where my next question is, you know, aside from just lithium, is this dosing concept and how that was for you and your team to like really nail down the ideal, you know, amounts of each of these ingredients. And, you know, what was that process like, and where did you really figure out this metric of, you know, what the right dose is for each ingredient?
Yeah. So a quick comment on lithium, which is that, you know, the dosage that we use is a microdose. So it's a 1/100th of what you might get in a bipolar setting, for example. And it's important for people to realize that lithium is a natural element that's typically found in our food supply throughout evolution, right? So it leaches through the rocks into the water, and then into the water supply for the plants, for the animals, and for you. And we, with water purification and with processed foods and factory farming and so on, we don't have lithium in our diet like we used to. But the reason we included lithium was because it has favorable impacts on the epigenome, on lifespan in different animal studies, as well as on cognitive disorders like or neurological disorders like Alzheimer's and dementia. There's a really interesting article published in the New York Times a while back where they looked at different communities that had lithium in their natural food and water supply. And what they found was that there were lower rates of depression, suicide, rape, murder. All of the rates of all of these went down significantly when it was these micro doses in people's food and water supply. So, so there's all of these longevity benefits, and then it's a nice to have that it also just helps you feel more in control of your life in a sense. So that's a nice to have added short-term benefit or mid-term benefit that you get from the ingredient. Now, to your question about dosing for all of these ingredients, we went through all of the scientific papers, and of course, a lot of them are animal studies, and then you can do the dose equivalents or the scaling for humans. But then of course there are human studies for all of these ingredients too. So everything we use is a natural ingredient. It's either found in human biology, but declines with time. For example, calcium alpha-ketoglutarate, the alpha-ketoglutarate molecule, is something that we have, declines precipitously as we age. Hyaluronic acid, another one that is in our biology, but we have less of it. But and then there are other things that we have in our food. It's just found in nature and we've been consuming. And so when we looked at the scientific studies, of course, we consider toxicology and LD50s, and then we make sure that we are nowhere near any of those types of dosages. We look at the where side effects might occur in different studies for different dosages. And then we also look at like the minimum effective doses and which dosages are exhibiting the favorable characteristics when it comes to longevity. And then of course, we then have to have this holistic vision looking at all of the ingredients and keeping in mind that we don't want to overdo anything. For example, If a molecule is a hormetic stressor, right? So this idea of hormesis, which is putting a little bit of stress on the body, and then the body comes back stronger and more resilient. You can think of that in a macro sense. When you exercise, your muscles will get bigger from the stress you put on them. It happens at the microscopic level too. And there are certain like ingredients, phytonutrients found in plants, like for example, pterostilbene, which is in Novos, which has a little bit of a hormetic effect. So we wanted to be mindful of the hormetic effect and make sure that we didn't overdo the hormesis. Same thing with fisetin. Fisetin at higher doses can have senolytic effects. But because this is daily administration, and because if you go too aggressive with senolytics, you can actually damage nearby healthy cells, including stem cells. We didn't want to risk that. So we kept the dosage lower. So I can't give you like a very simple answer, but what I would basically say is that we looked at the ranges of the dosages. We looked at the side effect profiles and toxicology data. We looked at the minimum effective dosages. We looked at all of the ingredients and the mechanisms through which they worked. And then we determined a dosage with all of the ingredients in mind that would be ideal in our, you know, professional estimation, along with the scientists that were part of the project.
Interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting because I know that, you know, that is like for dosing, it makes sense. I mean, if you have, you know, animal models, yeah, you can superimpose that and do the calculations and stuff. But I mean, there is still this thing of really, you know, modulating dose for human beings that is, you know, it's a whole area of science in terms of like, you have to be very careful because even though it makes sense to have a certain dose, given what, you know, if you are testing in a mouse and then you want to transpose that onto a human, you still have to be careful because we will react differently, you know, and depending on just your overall biology. But that's a really interesting approach, and I think it's a great start, you know, in terms of figuring that out, because I always ask brands, you know, I have so many brands that come on that are, you know, quote, clinical grade or medical grade. And my first question is always, well, what's your dosing? You know, where is this concept? Because nobody's really, I think, discussing that. And the reason I bring that up is we had previously spoken about microdosing, and that's just a testament to where I'm getting at is that, you know, sometimes you don't need too much of things. Sometimes you don't need what you think you'll need for, you know, a drug or a pharmaceutical or any kind of molecule to work and provide benefits. So, you know, I think it's a very intricate dance in the realm of science, you know, figuring this out. So I'm very interested to see, you know, how your formula evolves over time. I'm also curious to see, you know, if in the future, the clinical trials that you guys are going to be getting data back for, like how that turns out. But very fascinating. Absolutely.
So, you know, a couple of things to mention. So, you know, trying to extrapolate from an animal species is the whole like allometric scaling approach, right? And but allometry is you can only go so far with that. Like you said, like we might still react differently, and it's not a precise way to go about doing things. So, that's where looking at studies and historical data and particularly in humans really, really comes into play. The other thing I'd mention is the whole, you know, dose response curve concept, you know, this U-shaped dosage response curve that most drugs tend to follow, which is, you know, essentially like the optimal dose isn't the highest nor the lowest. It's somewhere in between. And you have to really find like where that middle ground is to be able to have that maximal efficacy, and also then minimizing any chances for side effects. So these are things that we're very mindful of in all of the products that we put out, as well as any advice or guidance that we give on our content when it comes to other types of supplements that we recommend people consider taking for general health, supplements that we don't sell, but that we're just trying to give some guidance on. We consider those factors.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to add to your point, you know, I know you guys are doing it right, but, you know, just for our audience, you know, there is this thing called pharmacokinetics. And really what you learn from that, like studying pharmacokinetics with different types of pharmaceuticals, is this idea of accumulation over time. And I know, Chris, you had mentioned the toxicology, you know, aspect of things earlier on, but I think that's something that consumers have to be aware of with like just any supplements. You know, I think if you're just out there going to like a GNC or a Walgreens or something, like I just really urge all of you to keep in mind that, you know, molecules and drugs and any kind of any vitamin, anything it is you put in your body, it will accumulate over time, whether that's on a cellular level or subcellular level. I can't speak, sorry. It will accumulate. And that's where toxicology is very important to really keep in mind and to understand, because what I'm seeing a lot of right now in the consumer space is that people are buying all these supplements and they're just basically, without knowing it, ODing on them on a molecular level, because your body is just getting exposed to too much, you know? So that's where I think Novos, for me, it's very, very exciting, Chris, because you guys are really, you know, you're giving this solution-oriented approach to the average consumer versus them just going into a store and trying to pick out like what supplements are going to help me, you know what I mean? In terms of whether that's aging well, whether that's energy levels, whether that's, you know, whatever it is that you think that you're lacking in, right? I mean, you have to go to a reliable source. And I think Novos is definitely paving that road, you know, in terms of also supplement science, because, you know, it's really anarchy in that realm, you know, right now, as far as I see it. And from a science perspective, you know, there's really no regulation and there's no way of really telling if these supplements are even working. And, you know, a classic example I love to state is vitamin D. You know, how many people do you guys know out there that, or your family member or somebody that is lacking in vitamin D levels? I mean, it's like a problem that's getting worse and worse, you know, as we see in medical science yearly, it's getting worse. More people are reporting lower levels of vitamin D. And unfortunately, what we do, you know, from the medical standpoint is we'll give you, say, for example, 50,000 international units, you know, and say that here you go, take this once a week, and we're just going to hope and pray it works. But unfortunately, what we're noticing with these vitamins and these things that we're providing to help your body is that you're not absorbing them. So, you know, that's where I get very fascinated, Chris, with Novos, because you had mentioned this idea of nutrition absorption, right? Like actual utilization of nutrients. And so I'm very curious, you know, if you could really talk about that aspect, because I think it's very important to educate our consumers about what nutrient absorption or utilization really means from a science perspective and how you guys are approaching it.
Sure, sure. So, there's one thing that you brought to mind that I'd like to comment on, which is when I was starting Novos, I was going to biotech conferences and hearing, you know, all of the research that was being done in longevity, and came to realize that everything that was being done was either purely academic or it was biotech pharmaceutical, and there was really nothing happening on the consumer side. But then when I looked at the supplement space, to your point, I felt like the supplement space was not very accountable and responsible, and largely as a result of not as much FDA regulation, which is a blessing in some ways and a curse in others. And so what I wanted to do was to create a company that took the best aspects from each of those respective industries and merged them together into a company that kind of stands in the middle between those two types of companies. And so we get the benefit of a supplement company in the sense that our ingredients are natural. So we don't need to do the FDA, approval process of testing out, rigorously with tens of millions or sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars before bringing the product to market. And that means that we could also iterate more quickly. We could launch more products, and we could also address, aging as a quote unquote disease, rather than having to create something for a medical condition, which the pharmaceutical side has to create something for some sort of medical condition.
Yeah.
And that in some sense is a limitation for them. And then the pros of pharma and biotech is that they are very methodical about the research, about the scientific experiments, about proving out efficacy and safety data. And so we wanted to bring both to the table and then add something in that no one was doing, which is really just being very transparent with the consumer and educating them and making them aware. You know, we are very confident in what we're doing. We don't think we're perfect, and we will learn along the way. But we want the community, the consumer, to learn along with us and to be healthier in the process. So with all of that said, to your question, when it comes to the absorption of the different nutrients, you know, a couple of quick things that come to mind is, of course, related to the solubility of the molecules, right? So the fat soluble molecules like vitamin D or K or A, E, these tend to accumulate more in the body, more so than the water soluble molecules. Water soluble molecules, you oftentimes hear you pee it out, though it's not that simple. Some water soluble molecules you might accumulate more so than you might think. But it is easier for the body to rid itself of a quote unquote overdose of something like, you know, vitamin B12 or the B vitamins in general. So when it comes to that, and especially when it's general health supplements, as we put it, as opposed to longevity health supplements, we suggest that people exercise more caution when it comes to these fat soluble vitamins. Like, for example, you mentioned vitamin D. So that's something you probably want to get tested once a year or twice a year, just to make sure that your levels are within a healthy range and you're not going too high or getting too low. And that can then apply also for, vitamin A and vitamin E and so on. And then for the water soluble vitamins, you can be a little bit more liberal with your intake of them. Of course, you don't want to go to real extremes. If you have a B complex vitamin or something, and you see that you have like 1000% of the daily value of vitamin B12. Like that's fine. And it's fine because of what I mentioned, because it's water soluble, but also because the RDAs that the government has established are, many would believe are too low for most of the essential nutrients out there, largely because the way that they do their studies is to to just prevent any sort of condition, illness from taking form, like scurvy, for example. But not for the sake of optimized health. And the second thing is that they're not really long-term studies. It's just like looking for making sure that these things, these illnesses don't take place, but not about like over the course of years or decades, like what is the ideal level for you to have. And so generally speaking, most of the nutrients, not all, but most of them are a little bit, the RDAs are a little bit on the more conservative lower end. And we as a company suggest that you might want to go a little bit higher on some of those nutrients. Then of course it's individual. So like I, for example, I have a genetic polymorphism called MTHFR C677T. I'm homozygous for it. And so that means that I don't methylate as well. And so, a good 15% approximately of the population is also homozygous for this. And maybe another 30% are heterozygous for it. So it's pretty common, but it means that I need more B vitamins and more methyl donors than the average person does. And so I take, my B complex every day, and I get some methyl donors in the form of whether it be choline from egg yolks, or you can also supplement with choline or phosphatidylcholine or trimethylglycine, all of these different types of supplements to be able to increase your methyl donors a little bit. So there are individualistic aspects to it that if you really wanted to dig into, you could. But there are some general rules just when it comes to like fat soluble versus water soluble, and which ones you can be a little bit more liberal with and versus which ones you want to be a little more conservative with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it makes sense what you're saying. And I fully understand that, you want to take fat soluble vitamins with fats, right? I get that. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, it was more of a question of, just gut permeability and, how we are dealing with now with like a more leaky gut syndromes everywhere, or what people are saying to be leaky gut, and the big reason why I asked was because I think overall, we're seeing this reduced absorption of what we really need for just optimal health because mm-hmm. of things like too much preservatives in our food, because of things like that are just training our body to not function as it would if you grew up, for example, in the woods somewhere, right? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I have grandparents who lived in rural India, and they both, both my grandfather and my grandmother, like maternal side, lived to be over 100 years old. And all they ate was farm agriculture land, grown by themselves, like the food they grew for themselves, and it was not riddled with all the crap that we deal with now in the Western world. And they lived to be very, very healthy, and not, they weren't just 100 some years old, they were healthy at that age. And I can't, help but wonder, what is it that we're doing in Western society that's leading to this, speeding up the process of this aging, but also even if we do live to be longer, like we're not living, better lives is my point, right? And that's where I think the absorption part really was very interesting to me, because one of the things that I've noticed with a lot of patients with various disorders is that it really comes down to, are you absorbing the normal nutrients your body needs? Because if you go to your doctor and get a blood work done, and really test and see if you have the right amounts, you guys will be shocked sometimes, what you're lacking in. So that's why I'd asked you, Chris, but I think your answer was wonderful. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. I think just to round out the interview, I want to ask you, what is the future for Novos? Like, what are you guys looking to do, in the coming years? I know you had mentioned clinical trials, very exciting, but like just, an overview, if you could provide us.
Sure. Yeah. So we as a company intend to always be on the tip of the spear when it comes to longevity research. And we do this by being very close with the scientific community, whether it be our scientific advisory board members that you can see on our website, or it's the, more than a dozen other scientists that we regularly work with that you don't see on our website. And that we expect as we grow, will also grow in the relationships that we have with scientists, as well as medical doctors who are practicing, longevity medicine in their clinics. And so, you know, along those lines, that means that as scientific discoveries are made and scientific innovations are made, we intend to bring them to Novos and then to you, the consumer. So that will mean future formulations. It will mean future tests and experiences for you to be able to adhere to a lifestyle that's more conducive to longevity. It will mean additional content and expanding that beyond what we currently have. And so we envision ourselves as being, and I believe we already are this, but there's just not as much public awareness for longevity as would be ideal, as a longevity platform. And as consumers become more aware of the idea of longevity, we hope that they choose us as being that platform for transparent, honest information, for the best solutions that are available. That's what we always want to do, is provide the best solutions that you can possibly find out there on the market. And so we intend to adhere to that as we grow and as the scientific body of evidence grows.
I love that. And you know what? In my books, you guys are the hallmark for longevity science. So I really, really applaud you and your work, and really where it, like the vision, you know, you've shared with us is just so touching to me as a human being, that you've come from this very genuine place with what you're doing. And I am just so excited to see that this is happening and that you're doing this and you're bringing this to the world, because we need more people like yourself and your team that are really dedicated to understanding human health and understanding how to create accessible options like Novos is doing. I really encourage everyone that's tuned in for this episode. You guys have to check out this brand. I'm not joking. If there's one brand when it comes to anything ingestible and in general, when it comes to longevity, it's this. You know, I, like I said, have been very, very excited to interview Chris, you know, ever since I learned of the brand. And I'm very excited, you know, even now, even more excited now that I've spoken to him about just the overall vision, because this is the next frontier, in my opinion. You know, we have to support companies that are doing this kind of work and doing it with such good diligence and due diligence. So I really encourage everyone listening, check out novoslabs.com. You're going to find all this information that Chris has mentioned on there. And I really, really encourage you guys to do that homework and to dive in, you know, dive into this and take your health in your own hands in some ways where you're learning and you're becoming more knowledgeable, and then ask questions, you know, wherever you, you know, find holes or questions for yourself, ask them, and we'll definitely pass them along to Chris's team. But Chris, thank you so much. This has been such an honor, and I would absolutely love to host you again anytime if you have time in your schedule.
Oh, thanks so much, Ekta. It's been a pleasure. And I will say that your questions are among the more sophisticated questions that I've been asked on podcasts. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you so much. And for everyone listening, I will be back next time.